a damn fool if you don't buy this right now. Would you ever yell that or even just say that to a prospect who's giving you an objection? Well, most likely not. In most situations, it would be totally inappropriate. Yet there are times when that exact statement could be the right thing to say. And you'll hear more about that later on. First, we'll discuss a number of practical ways you can respond to your prospect's objections. And not just with some pat memorized response, because your prospects are all different. They're individuals with their own unique personalities, likes and dislikes. Plus, each selling situation calls for its own unique approach. So it's almost impossible to have one specific way to respond to, let's say, the price objection or the I want to shop around objection. As you probably know by now, I don't put much faith in a canned, memorized presentation. Yet I am totally dedicated to and believe in planned and thorough, detailed preparation. And that's how you can approach this very important subject of responding to your prospect's objections. In just a moment, we're going to discuss a 7-step strategy for doing that. And included in those 7 steps, you'll hear a 5-step approach called the Ready Formula, along with a description of the 5 types of objections and the 6 powerful isolating questions. Now, you might be saying, wait a minute, Weldon. This sounds like some kind of scientific formula used in chemistry or physics. What happened to your idea about being flexible? A good question. And that's why, before we get into these formulas and strategies on objections, it's important to put these how-to-respond methods into perspective. Now, I'm not a cook, but I do know a little bit about recipes. I've seen them in our kitchen. I also have some good friends who pride themselves on their hobby of being a chef. And they tell me that the recipe for spaghetti sauce, for example, almost always contains certain basic ingredients. Found in almost every spaghetti sauce recipe are tomatoes and tomato paste, right? No matter who cooks it, those 2 basic ingredients are usually found in the sauce. So let's say those are the principles of spaghetti sauce. Next come the specifics. Again, most, but not necessarily all spaghetti sauce contains onions and garlic, olive oil, salt and pepper, sweet basil, oregano, parsley, and maybe some sugar. Now, the specific quantities of the main ingredients will be spelled out in the recipe. But when it comes to the seasoning items, you usually see words like add a pinch of this or a sprinkling of that. This aspect of the recipe, the seasoning, is where the cook's individuality and uniqueness comes in. And if you took 10 chefs with the exact same printed recipe, you'd most likely end up with 10 different tasting spaghetti sauces. That's what responding to objections is like. Totally unique and flexible, and yet there are certain basic principles that determine what you'll say. Okay? Let's start cooking up some great recipes for responding to objections. The first thing to get clear is that your main objective is to stay in the sales presentation. Because as we've already discussed in the previous messages, when you get an objection, it's because you're still below the prospect's will invest line. Your prospect's balance scale of decision hasn't reached 51% positive yet. So your goal here is to have them keep an open mind in spite of their objections so that you can add more need, use, or value to their decision-making process. It's helpful to have a plan, an organized way to respond to your prospect's objections. And to do that, here's a highly effective 7-step strategy. Remember, it's simple, but not easy. So there are 7 steps you should consider taking when you decide to respond to your prospect's objections. Now, let me give them to you quickly, and then we'll go over each one of them in a little more detail. First, smile. Big, wide, and happy smile. Second, listen. Really listen. Third, determine the real meaning of the objection. Fourth, cushion it. Fifth, restate it. Sixth, answer the objection. Seventh, get back to selling. Okay, those are the basic ingredients for the recipe of responding to objections. Now, here's an example of how it works. I'll let you sample my cooking, and then we'll go over each of the 7 ingredients that I used. So here's the situation. Just as you begin your presentation, you're about 30 seconds into it. The prospect says, listen, I'm sorry. I'm very busy now, and I'm just not interested. Okay, I'm smiling now. Can you hear it? Good. Now the response. I can sure see how busy you are, And I also know that if you were interested in our service, you would have called me instead of me contacting you. That's why I brought this short summary of all the benefits on a single sheet to save you time and still give you an opportunity to look at an idea that Len Baker from your Toastmaster Club thought could save you and your firm a lot of time and a lot of money. Would it be okay if I just showed you this one sheet, and then after 3 minutes, if you want me to leave, I will. Is that okay? And that's it. All 7 steps plus the ready formula. Now, if the prospect responded yes at that point, then you'd have 3 minutes to create interest. Then at exactly 3 minutes, you'd ask if they want you to stay or go. But if they said initially no and didn't want to see that one benefit sheet and take 3 minutes, you'd close for another time and set another appointment. One of the most vital ingredients to responding to your prospect's objections is to be able to think quickly on your feet. And later on, I'll tell you more about that and how you can develop that ability. But for now, let's go over those 7 steps. Step number 1, smile. Show that you're confident. Be happy about getting an objection. You know what an objection means. Show me more need, use, and value. You haven't reached my will invest line yet. Think of how ordinary salespeople respond to their prospects' objections. Some of them look disappointed, others look shocked. Some might even get angry or defensive. How dare you reject me and my product? Hardly any of them ever smile. But when you smile and hold that smile for the count of 3, 1, 2, 3, it says to your prospect, I'm confident because I know something you don't know. And it's true. You know that 51% wins. So remember to smile. Objections are wonderful. Can you tell that I'm smiling at you right now? My voice shows it. And so will yours when you smile. Now step 2, listen. Really listen. Listen with your eyes as well as your ears. Put all your senses on full alert. Don't think about what you're going to say. Concentrate on what your prospect is saying and how he or she is saying it. Focus intently. Maintain eye contact. Avoid distractions. Listen. Really listen. Then step 3, determine the real meaning behind the objection. What did he mean by what he said? Could the objection be something he always says to salespeople, just a conditioned response? Or was he asking a question? Did she tell you to give her more information and evidence? Or was she setting a condition? Was he testing you? Was he setting up a situation which implied, hey, if you can, then I'll go ahead and buy? Or was she making an excuse? Was she covering up the real objection with a smokescreen? Was there something she wasn't telling you? Determining what somebody else really means is not easy. Your prospects themselves might not even know what they mean. So you have to make a decision. Do you think you got their meaning, or do you need more information? If you need more information, continue on steps 3 and 4, and then probe with more questions. If you feel confident about responding to their objection, continue through step 7. So for step 3, what does your prospect mean by their objection? Is it a conditioned response? I mean, something they always throw out. Like when you go into a store and some salesperson says, "Can I help you?" Don't you usually say, "Nah, I'm just looking"? Come on, you say it, I say it. 90% of the time, most people say it. It's just a conditioned response. And it really means you just want to browse a little first. Okay, so it isn't an objection, but it's just stated because it's a habit. What about these? Well, I'm really not interested. I can't afford it. Now's not a good time for me. See me in a few weeks. Do you have a card? What I have now is really working fine. I don't decide on those things. The budget is tapped out till next year. We already have a supplier. All of those could be a conditioned response, or they could be a question. Now is not a good time for me could really be the question, why should I take my valuable time to look at this? Or if it's, we already have a supplier, a question could be, why should I do business with you when I have them? Or was it a request for more information, additional data, or better evidence when they said, well, what we have now is really working fine? Or was your prospect setting up a condition when they said to you, the budget is tapped out for this year? Could that mean, if I'm excited enough about what you have, I can find the money somewhere if I really want to? Or was it just a test, setting you up to see how you'd respond to, Do you have a business card? One good answer to that test situation is this. Thank you for asking for my business card. That's the cushion. In my experience, there are usually just two reasons someone asks for my card. One is they want to end the presentation, and it's a polite way of doing it. And the other is they still have some questions I haven't fully answered yet. So which is it? Do you want me to pack up, or are there some points to clarify or questions unanswered? And just smile. If they say they still have some questions in their mind, then you'd ask, well, what are they? Let me see if I can answer them right now. Now, you might get another objection or a question. Give it a shot, though. But remember to smile. The smile is critical to avoid high pressure and being too pushy. And finally, an objection could mean an excuse, a smokescreen for their real objection. Like, see me in a few weeks. I mean, that could mean almost anything. I want to shop around. I have another proposal coming in. I don't really like you or trust you. I don't like your company. An excuse really is like smoke. You see it, but you can't grab a hold of it and work with it. So you need to find out what it really means. Determining what somebody really means by what they say is one of the most difficult and yet one of the most critical things to do. But with practice and careful listening, you can become much more accurate. Maybe not 100%, but in the 80% range of identifying what that objection really is. A conditioned response, a question, a request for more information or evidence, a condition for you to meet, a test for you to pass, a setting up of a situation for you to meet, or just an excuse, a smokescreen for another objection. So invest the time to think about the objections you give when you're the prospect and what you really mean by what you say. Remember my promise to you way back on message number one. If you get nothing out of this entire sales program except the one idea of studying yourself when you're the prospect, it'll be worth your investment of time and money in this program. And that's perfectly illustrated by the next story. The story of my friend Lloyd Conant, the partner of Earl Nightingale and the co-founder of Nightingale Conant Corporation based in the Chicago area, the leading producer and distributor of audio and video learning programs. My relationship with Lloyd Conant began in the early 1970s and continued until his passing years later. He was one of my first supporters and produced one of my first audio programs. I thought of him as the grandfather I never had. He was so kind and caring, as well as being an astute businessman. So when he shared the story with me, I paid close attention. On a trip to Chicago to visit his company on business, I had lunch with Lloyd at his country club. And then afterwards, we were to drive over to his home to see Hazel, his wife, who I also knew and liked so much. During lunch, Lloyd mentioned that he and Hazel had bought a new home since my last visit, and he thought I'd enjoy the story of how he found it. Well, of course I would. As you know, I love stories. Lloyd said that for years he had been looking for a new home and had finally almost given up. They just couldn't seem to find exactly what they were looking for. And then one day at a party, he met a realtor who asked if she could be his agent and help him find a new home. "No, I'm not interested," Lloyd said. Now, do you think that was really what Lloyd meant? Of course he was interested. What he really meant was he'd given up on looking. He had already spent too much time and had nothing but frustration to show for it. Well, this woman was a top 1% club member who knew how to respond to and cash objections. So she said, "Why not?" Lloyd replied, "Because no one can seem to find what I want. No one can get all the items on my list checked off." Well, the realtor got so excited when he said he had a list. She said, "You have a list of what you want?" "Of course," Lloyd said, "but it's got 107 items on it." "Wonderful," she said. "Tell me some of the things that are on your list." And here are some of the things that were on Lloyd's list. It had to be on a golf course, have a circular drive, be in the woods, not be visible from the road, not be more than 25 minutes from his office, have a Florida-type sunroom. And he went on, and then she said, "Mr. Conant, if I can find you a home that has everything on your list, will you buy this home through me?" Lloyd Conant continued telling me the story as we drove to his home in the woods, on the golf course, and as I got out in his circular driveway, he finished the story and said, "Of course I told her I'd buy it from her." And I did. Now think how that story relates to you. The prospect's initial objection of, "I'm not interested," had nothing to do with the real objection. Next point. The realtor was able to get Lloyd to reveal the real objection. No one can find all the things on my list. So she went right for the close using, if I could, would you? Now, of course, she didn't sell anything that day at the party. But what she did was isolate the objection and get the commitment to invest if she could solve his problem to his satisfaction. How thrilled Lloyd and Hazel were with that home, and how thrilled you'll be when you get the prospect's real objection out in the open so you can deal with it. Okay, so now let's go on to your step four, the cushion. Keep your prospect's mind open and avoid high pressure. Use a cushion statement that implies it's okay for you to have an objection. Really, it is. I don't mind at all. Here are some cushions you can use. Remember them for message number 9. We covered them there. That's okay. You're right to be concerned. That's an excellent point. I understand how you feel. Many people have felt that way. I used to feel the same way myself. That's all right. I respect your position, Mr. Prospect. Thank you for bringing that up. A cushion statement does what a real cushion does on a hard wooden chair. It softens. It makes it more comfortable, and it prevents your prospect from feeling slammed. As a prospect, I've had salespeople respond to my objections in some pretty unusual ways, and you have too, I'm sure. Here are some of the really dumb things I've heard salespeople say to my objections. No way! Who told you that? Now that's stupid. You didn't really mean that, did you? You know, I've never heard that in 26 years of being in this business. One very young sporting goods sales guy said to me, as I looked at a racquetball racket, "Where did you ever hear that?" Now, would that soften my bottom? Or would it make me want to paddle his? No one ever taught that kid how to cushion an objection. So you remember, carry a collection of verbal cushions on every sales call. Now let's put this on hold for a moment and think back to that opening example when the prospect said 30 seconds into the sales presentation that he was too busy and not interested. What I did first was smile. Even though you couldn't see it, you should have been able to hear it in my voice. Next, I listened. Third, I had to make a quick assessment of what he might have meant by what that objection said. And in this case, it was pretty easy. I made it a conditioned response. The prospect was busy, and how could he be interested when he didn't even know what it was all about? So I quickly cushioned him by saying, "I can sure see how busy you are." How could you argue with that? It was a cushion, right? Okay, let's go on now to a situation where you really might not know what was meant by the objection. Here's where you can use some probing questions to help clarify exactly what they meant. Now remember, when in doubt, ask. Now here's my probing question list. Let me read it to you. Just to clarify my thinking, what did you mean by give a special consideration? Or what brought that to your mind at this moment? What makes that so critical right now? Where did you hear that that was a problem? Who do you know that ran into that situation? What if we could find a way to solve that? Would that be helpful? What would your reaction be if we could do that? Would you be disappointed if we couldn't do it? Really, how important is that to your overall decision? Please help clarify that for me. I'm not really sure what you mean. After you get more information, go back to steps 1 and 4 and smile and cushion again before continuing to step 5. Step 5 is restate. Now that you've, number 1, smiled, 2, listened, 3, determined the meaning, 4, used the cushion, and then probe for more information if necessary, you need to restate the objection to prove you really listened. And in restating the objection, don't just repeat it exactly like your prospect said it. Alter it slightly so you don't sound like a parrot. Also, state it in a way that shows you understood what your prospect really meant by what he said. And then ask your prospect to confirm that you understood by simply saying something like, "Is that right?" You should then hear some statement of confirmation, such as, "Well, yes, that's exactly what I meant." Or maybe just a nonverbal sign like a nod of the head or a smile. Then you can go on and respond to the objection, which is step 6. But before you go to step 6, think back to how I restated that objection about being too busy and not interested. I just said one sentence, and it covered the first 5 steps. I said, smiling, "I can sure see how busy you are. And if you were that interested in our service, you would have called me instead of me contacting you." Now, notice how I said it. I didn't say it annoyed or like a smart aleck. Yeah, I can see how busy you are, and I guess if you were that interested in our service, you would have called me instead of me having to contact you, you pompous, self-impressed bully you. Okay, well, you get the point. I mean, your tone of voice is so critical in how you respond to your prospect's objections. Confident, calm, interested, concerned, and not annoyed, frustrated, or belligerent. Okay, now it's time for step 6. Answer the objection. Your prospect's mind should be open now. There shouldn't be any feeling of high pressure. So how will you respond? Here's where the READY formula will help you answer almost any objection. READY is an acronym. The R stands for reverse it. Make the objection become the reason to invest. You could say in response to the price objection, "You're right. The price for the XL120 is over $1,500 more than the unit you saw from the other company." There's the cushion and the restatement. When you look at that $1,500 as part of the overall system, it represents about a 7% price difference between the XL120 and an ordinary system. Let's look at why that 7% more up front is actually going to save you money in the first 24 months. Then you go back to selling your increased efficiency, better warranty, higher quality product, less downtime, less maintenance cost. That $1,500 more up front could actually save them $15,000 down the road. So R of the READY means reverse it, from costs too much to saves you money. Not the latest technology. Becomes that's why it's so reliable. It's tested by time and a proven long-term winner. Has too many options, reverses to become, that's why you have such flexibility. Okay, now let's go to the E, explain it. Here's where you take the route of providing even more evidence, data, and information. Your knowledge of the product is so vital here. When you explain it, make sure you explain it in a language your prospect can understand. Remember, what people don't understand, they tend to oppose. As an example, think about the amazing Albert Einstein. In June of 1905, Einstein wrote a paper presenting his theory of relativity and eventually the famous equation E equals mc squared. But the physicists of his day rejected it. They simply didn't understand it. Even by 1921, when Einstein was given the Nobel Prize for Physics and his theory was proven correct, it was still beyond the grasp of most scientific minds. You know, one witty British astrophysicist, Arthur Eddington, when asked if it was true that only 3 people on Earth understood Einstein's theory of relativity, paused and said, I'm trying to think of who that third person is. It's such an advanced scientific theory that even today, most of us don't really understand it. So be sure in your selling that when you explain something, you do it in a way that not just Einstein, but almost anyone could understand it. The A in READY is for admit it. If the objection is true, just admit it. As an example, when I gave Brent, the Shutterbug Camera Sales Pro, the objection about needing a suitcase to carry all those camera lenses and accessories, he just admitted it, and he used it as a way to close the sale. He said, "Let's go pick out a camera bag for those accessories." So if you're selling a service and time to train their people is part of the package that you offer, and the prospect says to you, "You know, that's going to take my people away from their regular work and maybe even require us to pay some overtime," then you could say, "Yes, you're right, Mr. Prospect. The initial training time will cut into your daily workflow, and it could cause you to pay some overtime. And when that initial training is done and your system is up and running, think how much time you will have saved in the long run. Here's what one of our clients found they saved in just the first 45 days. And now get back to selling. When you use the admit it, you're saying, "You're right, it's true, but so what?" You keep going with your presentation and sell value. But when you get to the D of your READY formula, deny it, you have to say, "Hold on there, prospect, that simply isn't true, and here's why." Now, of course, you need to cushion it, restate it, and then deny it. As an example, let's say your prospect says that they heard your company has been cited by some government agency for some illegal action, and it's just not true. Well, you could use the deny it technique by first smiling and saying something like this, "I'm glad that you brought that issue up." Now, that's the cushion. And what was meant might be a request for more information. So you'd say, "You're right. There was a major fine issued, and it was certainly deserved. I'm just pleased to tell you it wasn't our organization that was fined. It was another company with almost the exact same name as ours. We're the LMNOP Corporation, and the one that was fined was the LMNOC Corporation. So many people have gotten us confused. And since you brought up the issue of corporate integrity, here, look at a list of civic and professional awards that we've won. It's nice to know you're dealing with one of the good guys, isn't it? Now, if you weren't the good guy, you don't deny it. You just tell the truth. Of course, telling the truth is always a good policy. Yet in some cases, it could get you and your organization in trouble, legally, that is. You know, in recent decades, suing has become a national pastime, and in some circles, it's become a shortcut to riches. People sue their relatives, friends, and of course, companies. Now, I'm certainly no lawyer. I'm probably the farthest thing you'll ever find from a lawyer. And I have no background or expertise in what I'm going to tell you next, except as an idea reporter. You can be sued by a competitor if what you say in your sales presentation is causing, in their opinion, confusion or deception. Now, what does that mean in plain language? It means don't knock the competition or even cast doubt on their products, service, or quality. Instead, when a prospect asks you specifically, what about the XYZ Corporation and their Model 287? Just smile and say, you know, gee, I've heard about it, but I'm not that familiar with it. What have you heard about it? Hey, maybe they heard it's junk. Doesn't do the job. Or if they say, you know, I heard it's the highest rated product on the market, the best one out there. Now you can use your third party evidence in reports and validation. Just ask what they know first. If they think it's junk, hey, they said it, not you. Or just check with your sales manager and find out what your corporate policy is and what you can and can't say. Okay, now let's go back to that last ready formula, the letter Y. Y stands for ask why. See if you can get your prospect to expand on that objection. And then perhaps you can respond to it by simply asking, may I ask why you feel that way? Or, why is that important to you? Or, you know, I was just wondering why you thought of that. Keep the ready formula in mind. And remember, you don't need to eliminate objections. In many cases, it's not even possible. Your job as a professional salesperson is to sell benefits. So pile on value until you reach the will invest line. And then step 7, get back to selling. Remember, objections indicate that you haven't reached the will invest line yet, or that you haven't tipped the balance scale in favor of the decision to invest. You have to add more need, use, and value by getting back to selling. So continue your presentation and pile on more benefits. You've heard me say this over and over again, 51% wins, and that you don't have to overcome or eliminate the objections. You need to just pile on value. Think of one of the biggest and most expensive investments people make in their entire lifetime, buying a home. Let's say you, not Lloyd Conant, bought that beautiful home in the Chicago suburbs, and you've been living in it for 2 years, and you invite me over. And as we sit outside on your patio, I say to you, oh, this is sure a beautiful home. It's just perfect, isn't it? And you say kind of half-heartedly, well, not really. Now, being a student of selling, I'd pick up on your less-than-thrilled response and follow casually with, well, are there some things that you're not happy about? Close question there. But usually that question gets you specifics, not just the yes or a no. If, however, you just said, well, yes, then I'd probably follow it up with, well, gee, what are they? This sure seems like a beautiful place. And here it comes. Well, for one thing, we've had 16 golf balls come through our windows so far. And you know that long driveway, it's so hard to plow when it snows. Another thing is, the sunroom leaks every time it rains. And come fall, it costs a fortune to collect the leaves from my small forest. And one other thing, that electrical service, it's underpowered for the size of the house. And our lights flicker every time the air conditioning comes on. Wow, what a disappointment, I'd say. How much do you want for this place, since I guess you'll be selling it? Selling it, you say? Why would I ever sell it? It's the best home I've ever owned. Oh, really? Well, how's that? Well, I come home from work, it's like an oasis. Oh, sure, some things about it are a pain, but this is paradise on earth, in spite of the few less than perfect things. Now, of course, I just made all this up. But it could be true, couldn't it? Think of some of the big items that you've purchased, like your home, your car, your truck, your boat, a summer cottage. It's probably not perfect. Yet, if 51% or more is still positive, you're most likely keeping it, and might even buy it again. So it's not a matter of eliminating the negatives. It's a matter of the positives outweighing the negatives in that balance scale we all have in our mind. Okay, so let's cook up some more specifics with this next example. Say you had contacted our insurance professional, Martin Howie, before he retired. You wanted to check out his price on insurance for your two cars because your present coverage is about to expire. You've gotten Martin's name from a friend, and you go see him. Martin gives you a quote, sells himself, his company, and his service, and you've been there about 25 minutes. And you can tell he's a conscious, unconscious competent. And he closes by saying, "Well, how did you want to handle your premium? Should we bill you monthly or just semi-annually?" Now, that's a good choice close. And you respond, "Well, I think I want to do a little more shopping around before I make a commitment. Could I get a copy of the rates and coverage you just gave me?" Now, this is real world. You probably have two cars. You probably have insurance. And you might have shopped around to find an agent or called the toll-free number for a quote. Or you might have shopped on the internet for a carrier. So let's go back to your objection in this example and see how Martin would have used the 7-step strategy. Number one, smile. Of course he'd smile. He's a top 1% club member. Two, listen. He is a great listener, and he pays attention to your every word and how you say it. Number three, determining the meaning. Was your objection a question? Did you really mean, "Can you show me why I don't need to shop around?" Or was it a condition? If you can prove to me you're the best value around, I'll sign up right now. Or was it an excuse? "I don't like guys who compete in duathlon races." No, I'm only kidding there. The excuse could be, "I'm not really sure that I really need a full service agent. I know I can save money with companies that let me buy direct online with no agent." Well, in this example, let's go to both a question and a condition as what you meant by your objection. So Martin gives you another big smile and says, "You're right to want to make sure you get the best possible value for your insurance dollar." That's number four, the cushion. You're right. Next, Martin decides to briefly probe for a bit more information, and he says to you, "How important to your overall decision is the premium compared to the close-at-hand, local, personalized service you can get from me?" And you respond, "Well, it's important, it's very important, but it's not my only consideration." Let's pause a moment here and think about that statement. What if you had said, like many prospects do, "Oh, price is definitely my only consideration. I will only go with the lowest premium I can find." Well, in that case, Martin is out. And if that happened in your selling, you might be out too. Because as you know, there will always be someone out there who is strictly a low-price buyer. Remember, not everyone is a prospect, especially those low-price buyers. So what do you do? You cross them off your prospect list. Or you might do what Martin did. He'd give them a recorded message on a CD or a cassette as they left his shop for a lower price quote. And on his recorded message, he would resell all his value-added services. You might do the same thing. In his case, about 10% did come back as customers. That's found business. It didn't take any additional time on his part to do that. Now, on the other hand, top 1% club members Jim and Debbie Hayes refused to sell a Mastercraft boat in their dealership to those low-price-only buyers. They used the 10-to-win point system and actually deduct points based on a prospect's level of cheapness. Experience has taught them that if a customer is so cheap by nature that price is their major consideration at the point of sale, they will probably be a long-term problem customer on every service call, every repair bill, and then try to cut their prices on skis, equipment, wakeboards, ropes, and wetsuits. So Jim and Debbie Hayes just write them off. They say it's not worth it. They sell quality and service, and they want to deal with customers who are quality and service buyers. And since they sell every boat that gets delivered to their showroom from the Mastercraft factory anyway, why should they subject themselves to dealing with cheapskates? Yes, there's a big difference between being cheap and wanting a good value. Now, that's the Hayes' approach. But unless you're the owner of your own company, you might not have that option to eliminate that type of prospect. Okay, back to your car insurance now. Step 5, restate. Martin smiles again. You know, it's good to smile a lot in selling. It shows you're not afraid or defensive. You're totally confident. Stronger than ever, Martin then says, "So what you really need is to convince yourself that the coverage you get and the premium you spend for that coverage is absolutely the best value you can find. Is that right?" And you say, "Exactly right, Martin." Now step number 6, answer the objection. Martin chooses the E of the ready formula. Explain it. He gives you more evidence and information. like the fact that he has 4,137 policyholders with an average of 4.2 policies each and maintains a 96% annual retention rate. So 96 out of 100 policyholders renew each year. The other 4% have either died or moved away. And then he sells his Martin Amazing How He Approached the Service. Maybe even shows you my testimonial letter about how he helped me move boxes after that flood. Then step 7, he gets back to selling, adds new units of conviction about what he will do for you and your family, and then he closes again. Now that's really using the science of selling. And that's what you can do too. Next, let's talk about the different types of objections. There are several different types. Genuine objections. These are the ones you're not able to do anything about. So just keep adding value. Like my camera. It's still somewhat complicated. It still has all those extra lenses. So what? There were enough benefits to outweigh those genuine objections. Then there are the hopeless objections, where the will invest line is just too high. I'm going bankrupt. I'm moving to Morocco in the morning. Forget it. Don't waste time on these. There are lots of people and organizations who need and want what you have and are willing to invest in it. Avoid wasting your time and energy on poorly qualified and low point prospects. You're not going to sell everybody. Some objections are based on prejudice. Your prospect could have had a bad experience at one time and now associates your product or company with that negative experience. Remember how I felt about automobile salespeople? Prejudiced. Richards Leasing changed that years ago. How about our farmer's objection to buying on credit? He was prejudiced, yet he still bought. There are also hearsay objections. These are similar to prejudiced objections, except they're not personal or firsthand. They usually begin with, well, somebody once told me, or I read somewhere, or I heard that. Hearsay objections can be handled by presenting more facts, evidence, and benefits to your prospect. Like Brent did. You're right, Mr. Weldon. $400 is a lot for a base camera. Let's look at what you get for your investment. And he got back to selling. Some objections can be classified as trivial. They're minor, insignificant. But they can be troublesome if they happen to cover up an unstated objection. For example, in residential real estate, a prospect might say, you know, that washing machine is too old. But an item like a washing machine means nothing compared to a $600,000 decision about a home. It's trivial. But could it be a cover-up for a more significant objection? Then get it out in the open. Trivial objections can many times be ignored. They don't always require a response. Just add more value. Pile on the benefits. And then there's that infamous killer, the put-off or delay objection. Well, you know, I think I want to think about it, Mr. Salesperson. Why don't you come back later in the week? Or why don't you give me a call next month? The put-off objection can be deadly. How do you deal with it? One way is to create greater urgency. Show that during the last year, your product would have provided many additional benefits that would have already paid for itself if they had got it last year. The put-off objection is sometimes a cover-up for something else. Like, I think I can get it cheaper. Or I want to get some other opinions from a friend. Or I don't really like you. Here are a few very common objections and possible responses which you can personalize to your own selling situation. Remember, the goal is to keep your prospect's mind open and get back to selling so you can add more need, use, and value. The strategy, again, is first smile. Listen, then determine the real meaning behind the objection, cushion, restate, use the ready formula, and then get back to selling and close again. So what if the prospect says, that's too much money? Here, let me read some possible things that you can say. Now remember, smile. Mrs. Prospect, I can appreciate how you feel. These days, it seems like everything is so expensive. That's one of the nice things about this equipment. The quality is built in, and it will last you for years. So it actually saves you money in the long run. And then get back to selling. Build a new unit of conviction. In this example, I use the R and the E of the ready formula. I reversed it and explained it. Another common objection? I can't afford it, not on my department's budget. I mean, I'd be getting in way over my head, and our controller is breathing down my neck. Smile and say, you're right, Mr. Prospect, to keep your investments within your budget. Many times I've seen people get excited over this program without thinking about the money, And since staying within your budget is so important to you, let's look at some of the unique ways that are available to help you handle the dollars and cents. And get back to selling. That was the E in the A. I admitted it and explained it. I'm sure you've heard this objection. Gee, you know, it really sounds good. Let me have your business card and I'll give you a call in a week or so. Okay, do you remember the recipe I gave you earlier? Hey, add this to your cookbook of objections and remember to begin with a smile. I'd be happy to give you my card, Mr. Prospect. But you know, in my experience dealing with organizations just like yours, I have found that there are usually only two reasons why decision makers ask for my business card. First, they really aren't interested at all in my services, and it's an easy way to let me down politely and get rid of me. Or second, they are interested, but they have some unanswered questions in mind. Mr. Prospect, in our situation today, which is it? Are you just not interested, or do you have some questions I need to answer? That's part why of the ready formula. Ask why. Don't be timid. Get the real objection out in the open. Now, it's not exactly as I said it before, but it uses the same principle, even if the words were a little different. Here's another common objection. I'll answer this one with an A. I'll admit it. You know, I hear you've had some trouble with the IRS lately. Thank you for bringing that up, Mr. Prospect. It's very important that you know the reliability and integrity of the company that you're dealing with. And I can assure you that that problem has been resolved. Here's what happened. And then describe the situation and ask, what would you have done if you were in charge of our company? And then listen to your prospect's answer. And if appropriate, say, well, that's just what we did. And get back to selling. If it's not what you did, then explain what you did. Sometimes you have to be firm. If your prospect's objection isn't true, you need to deny it without being antagonistic. For example, we only buy from approved vendors, and you've never dealt with our company before. Now, your first tendency might be to say, oh, yes, you have. But if you do that, you'll make your prospect lose face. Instead, say something like this, smile and cushion. That's a very good policy. It assures you of the special service you need. And before I left my office, I picked up your file and discovered that we have done some work with one of your other divisions before. Let's see how what we did with them can help you. And get back to selling. But what would happen if you really had never done business with this company before? You'd listen, determine the real meaning behind the objection, smile, cushion, and use the same technique, except after you restate, you'd ask, Mr. Prospect, how do you determine which company you'll deal with? What do you do if you can't seem to find the real objection, though? Use these six isolating questions. Oh, they are going to help you pinpoint the real objection. Learn these powerful questions so you can ask them naturally and sincerely. Question number one, would you mind if I asked why you feel that? And then restate the objection. Question number two, I see. Then is there any other reason other than? And repeat the objection. If the answer is no, then you go on to question number three. Just supposing that we could and give a solution to the objection, then you would want to go ahead, wouldn't you? If the answer is no, then go to question number four. And question number four is, then there must be some other reason. May I ask you what it is? When you uncover this new objection, repeat question three again. Well, just supposing that we could, then you would want to go ahead, wouldn't you? The goal is to isolate the prospect's objection before you proceed with question number five and six. And here they are. Question number five. What would it take, Mr. Prospect, to have you convince yourself? Let him tell you what he's thinking and what he wants. You might be surprised. Many times the reply is, well, I guess I'm already convinced. And then go on to question number six. And question number six is, well, what would you suggest we do? Give the prospect a face-saving way out so he can say yes with dignity and pride. Don't just sell him. Help him invest. Okay, let's use your six isolating questions and relate them to the sale of a wireless phone. For this illustration, say you want a new phone with all the latest features, but your objection is, I don't want to get a new one right now because the technology keeps changing so fast. This model will probably be outdated in a few months. Now, of course, that objection could apply to computers, cameras, GPS receivers, or almost any other electronic product. Technology is moving so fast. But is that the prospect's real objection? So here's where you can use those six isolating questions. Ms. Prospect, Would you mind if I asked you, why is it so important to you to have the latest in high-tech equipment? Well, her reply might be, well, so many times I've bought equipment when I should have waited a little longer for the newer models. I see. Is there any other reason other than wanting to have the latest technology in your wireless phone? Well, she says, no. Okay. Then just supposing that we could guarantee you that you would have the latest in wireless communications technology available to you, then you would want to go ahead now, wouldn't you? Well, not if it's going to cost me a fortune. Sure, but just supposing the cost is very reasonable and the technology wouldn't become outdated. Hey, if you can do that, I'd sign up right here and now. Let's stop here. Is this an investing signal? Sure it is. Did we isolate the objection? Yes, we did. So back to the units of conviction to add a little more value and then close again. It could go something like this. Ms. Prospect, when you get your new wireless phone through our company, you can participate in one of the two programs available to give you the assurance of having the latest in technology. First is the trade-in program, which gives you the opportunity to trade in your phone at the end of a year for a new one at a special savings. Or the second option you have, notice you have, not we have, is the leasing plan where for a fixed amount monthly, you can trade in your old phone for a new one anytime something new comes out that you want. Now, that was the feature and product benefit. Now for the customer benefit. That way, Ms. Prospect, you'll have the best and latest equipment to use with the minimum investment. These are great options, aren't they? Oh, yes, she says. And now close. Which program do you want to start with today? The once-a-year trade-in or the lease plan with unlimited upgrades? That's selling it with the million-dollar attitude. Again, those questions are, and let me read them to you slowly. Number one, would you mind if I ask why you feel that way? And then state the objection. Number two, I see. Then is there any other reason other than, and restate the objection. Number three, just supposing that we could, and you give the solution, then you would want to go ahead, wouldn't you? Number four, then there must be some other reason. May I ask what it is? Number five, what would it take, Mr. Prospect, to have you convince yourself? And finally, number six, what would you suggest we do? Oh, they're so powerful, but you've got to use them. Once again, what's the objection strategy? Smile, because you're prepared and you know objections are positive. Listen, determine the real meaning behind the objection, then cushion. Keep your prospect's mind open. Restate the objection to prove you understood it, and then use the ready formula. Reverse it, explain it, admit it, deny it, or ask why. And finally, get back to selling. Objections are stepping stones to your sale, and you don't have to eliminate them. Most of the time, it's not possible. But your job as a professional salesperson is to give the prospect more reasons for saying yes than he or she can give you for saying no. Tip that balance scale in favor of both of you. Now, to make these ideas yours, here's a few suggestions. When you make that list of the objections that you hear most often, see if you can write out the real meanings behind them. Structure at least three possible responses to each of the most common objections. Write out the exact words you'll use, and then practice, practice, practice. Make sure that they're your words, but focus on the principle that you're using. Here are a few more ideas to consider when you close the sale and settle the details. Congratulate your customer and give him or her something extra, a little extra value. In the camera store, Brent would throw in an extra roll of film whenever I bought a dozen. How about our jelly bean example? A few extra jelly beans makes the big difference. Wow! It was good before, now it's great. Service what you sell. Call back on your customers in person or on the phone. If they have a problem, help them solve it. Show that you care. Build satisfied customers, and they'll build your business by giving you referrals. Ask your customers what convinced them to invest after you've completed your presentation and closed the sale. Find out what you did right so you can repeat it. Ask for suggestions to improve. Say something like, "How could I have been even more helpful to you today, Mrs. Customer?" You know, your customers have great ideas. Just ask them. You know, we talked earlier about stated and unstated objections and how important it is to get those unstated ones out. And here's another way to do that. It's called the Is It method. If you run into an obstacle and you sense there's something under the surface, an unstated objection, use the Is It method. smile and say, Mr. Prospect, it seems something is standing in the way of you making a very good investment today. Is it a matter of the financing? Is it the product? Is it my company? Is it our service agreement? Is it me? Now, if the answers to all of these are no, then ask the last is it question. Then, what exactly is it, Mr. Prospect? Get the unstated objection out in the open. And what about simulation training? Remember our first astronauts? Perfect practice 300 times before they qualified to go to the moon. But practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. Only perfect practice makes perfect. So practice perfectly. Earlier, I told you there's a way to improve your ability to think even more quickly on your feet, to think of the right thing to say at the right time, and say it in the right way. It's to join a local Toastmasters club. There are over 8,600 clubs in 70 countries around the world. In the Phoenix, Arizona area alone, we have close to 100 Toastmasters clubs and 12 just in Scottsdale. Each club meeting usually consists of 3 5- to 7-minute prepared speeches. Each one is evaluated by a club member. In addition, the rest of the club gives written feedback on ways the speakers can improve. But the most helpful part of a Toastmasters club meeting is table topics, usually a 1-minute impromptu speech. So let's say it's your turn and I give you the topic. Okay, you're sitting on an airplane next to one of the world's most famous movie stars. You ask them, what was their most embarrassing moment on the set? Who are you talking to and what do they say? Go. Then a bell or a horn sounds to remind you to stop using SEAL talk. And at first you draw a blank. Then you stumble around. Wow, I mean, that's a long minute, you think. But after a few meetings, you'll be amazed how your mind starts to work faster, and your words come quicker, and you're improving. So when I say, okay, give me a 1-minute talk on what you do with $1 million tax-free. Go. Or you're asked by a 6-year-old boy, why don't your eyelash hairs grow as long as the hair on your head? Go. Give an answer. Or define tatterdemalion. Go. Okay, I'll stop. The subject matter isn't what's important. It's only an exercise to get you to think of a response quickly and construct an opening, a body, and a close in 60 seconds. On the You Can Speak With Impact series, I've devoted an entire session to Toastmasters and how it can help you communicate even more effectively. So don't wait a minute longer. Call their toll-free number, 1-800-9-WE-SPEAK. Now, there's one extra number in there. It's actually a letter, the K. Don't worry about that. 1-800-9-WE-SPEAK. Or log on to their website at www.toastmasters.org. You know, it could be one of the best investments you make in your selling career. You go check it out. As we've said, selling is a science. And there is one other very valuable quality to add to your scientific selling plan. Many years ago in April of 1971, in fact, oh, see, here comes another old story. Judy and I were looking for a new home. We had called on realtor Don Raymond because with his help, we had found our previous home, which we had now outgrown, and we had confidence in him again. Do your customers keep calling you back? Well, after weeks of looking, Judy and Don said they had found the house. Now it was up to me to make it a unanimous decision. We all drove over to see it. I didn't like it. It was too big, way too much property, 2 acres. It was too old. It was in need of too much work, and I thought it was way too much money. I was totally opposed. I said, come on, let's go and find something else. And as I started to get in the car, Don stopped me. He looked me square in the eyes and shouted, you're a damn fool, Weldon, if you don't buy this house right now. It's got everything you and Judy want. It's underpriced. It's the best value I've ever seen in all my years in real estate. I was shocked. Speechless, really. I looked at Don, at Judy, and then back at the house. Then in a stern voice, Don repeated the benefits and stated again that the home was an exceptional opportunity. He made me turn around and look again at the house and the property. This time, he said, look at it through new eyes, Joel. Look beyond the overgrown desert greasewood bushes and the weeds. Look beyond the tiny old kitchen and the 3 small bedrooms. Look beyond the outdated wall paneling in the living room. Yes, it had 4 different types of cheap wood paneling in the living room. And then he said, Look beyond the old steel casement windows that don't fully close and have no screens, and see it with your carpentry skills and Judy's creativity in design and decorating. Look into the future. Now, Don didn't make these statements in a soft, gentle way. He spoke loudly, sternly, and almost like an angry parent scolding a child for doing something so stupid. So I looked at it again. Really looked this time. At this 2,000-square-foot hodgepodge of a house, and tried to imagine the potential that it had. Finally, I said, "Judy, what do you think?" She said, "Don's right. Together we could make it great." "Okay," I said, "we'll take it." Am I a pushover? No. Don just got me over the will and vest line. But how? No cushion, no technique, no tack, no clothes, no units of conviction, almost nothing we covered in this entire sales training program. You see, Don Raymond possessed perhaps the two most important qualities of a sales professional. First, conviction. Total inner conviction. Don knew that home would be a great value for us. Second, he used TLC. He knew how to think like a customer. And he was right. It's the home we've lived in all these years. The location is just perfect. We raised our two daughters in it. Our old dogs and two goats are buried out in the back. And that home has grown to over 8,000 square feet and has increased in value so many times over since 1971. In fact, the house was already 25 years old when we bought it. And with the quality it now has, it will outlast both Judy and me. It's the single best investment we have ever made. And yet I almost walked away from it, had it not been for Mr. Don Raymond, sales professional with conviction. Question: do you have that kind of conviction? Do you communicate that to your prospects? When Don Raymond yelled at me that day, it was so out of character for him. That was what really got my attention. Once I began really listening to what he had to say, the opportunity became more obvious, and the positive benefits outweighed my objections. Remember, I still had the objections, but they were outweighed by the positives. Each year in April, Judy and I would call Don Raymond and thank him for having the conviction to persist in spite of my objections. How many of your customers, on the anniversary of their purchase, will be thinking of you? Well, why not send them an anniversary card so they won't forget the day that you helped them? When you put into practice the ideas, concepts, and techniques that you've been learning, and then add that rare and most valuable ingredient, conviction, a firm belief in yourself and your product, you'll be selling it with the million-dollar attitude. Now, here's what you can do. 10 things, and I wrote them down for you. They're so important. Number one, remember that almost everyone is a prospect until proven otherwise. Number two, list the objections you use when you're a prospect, along with those you hear when you're selling. Translate them into questions. Prepare responses for the most common ones. Number three, accept objections as positive signs of interest. Number four, look beyond what is stated. Search for the real objection. Five, use cushion statements before responding to objections. Number six, use the ready formula. Seven, ask the six isolating questions to uncover the real objection. Eight, bring unstated objections into the open by asking, "Is it?" Nine, develop conviction. Believe in yourself and your product, like Sam I Am and Don Raymond did. And finally, number 10, have fun. Selling professionally is fun when you're good at it. So make it fun. And remember, you're a damn fool if you don't respond to those objections with conviction and with a smile.